Comedy Rapport with Sam Cedar, where every day is casual Friday. That means Monday is casual Monday. Tuesday, casual Tuesday. Wednesday, casual hump day. Thursday, casual Thurs. That's what we call it. And Friday, casual Shabbat. The Majority Report with Sam Cedar.
It is Friday, March 12th, 2021. My name is Sam Cedar. This is the five-time award-winning Majority Report. We are broadcasting live steps from the industrially ravaged Gowanus Canal in the heartland of America, downtown Brooklyn, USA. On the program today, executive editor of the American Prospect, David Dayen, will be joining us. And later in the program, host of the Bituation.
Is that right?
Yeah, room.
Bituation room. Francesca Fiorentini will be here with us. Meanwhile, last night, Joe Biden calls for universal adult eligibility for COVID shots by May 1st. Also on the program, Nadler, Bowman, AOC, Maloney. Is there maybe we're close to the majority of the New York congressional delegation calls for Andrew Cuomo's resignation as the New York Assembly starts an impeachment investigation. Bernie Sanders to hold a wealth inequality hearings and highlight Bessemer Amazon workers. Jeff Bezos has been invited. No word yet whether he'll show. Biden administration now gearing up for a mass number of judicial nominations. The Senate advances the Becerra nomination for Health and Human Services. Marco Rubio sides with the Bessemer workers over their Dr. Seuss canceling bosses. Take it where you can get it, folks. Republicans bemoan the cost of COVID relief while also calling for repeal of the millionaire estate tax. And lastly, Mississippi banning trans girls and women from school sports. All this and more on today's Majority Report. Welcome, ladies and gentlemen. Thank you for joining us. Joining me, as always, Emma Vigeland. Emma, how are you today? Casual Friday.
I went casual with the flannel. I'm feeling good. It's, you know, it's we're high 50s, low 60s here in New York, although it was windy, which I didn't like.
Very obsessed with the weather these days, I've noticed.
Well, I have nothing else going on.
That is the problem. It's like Groundhog's Day, and just the idea that a significant weather change happens is...
Well, it's enough to like penetrate what feels like a simulation.
Yes, that's true. Last night was quite an announcement by Joe Biden. Certainly earlier than I think anybody's been anticipating. I haven't heard anything close to the idea. At one point, he said by July, I guess this is like only weeks ago, he said by July, they anticipate having enough COVID vaccine for anybody who wants it.
Yeah.
And now he's saying to the states, open it up to essentially everybody. I don't know if children will ever get vaccinated, frankly, if it's even called for. Has not even occurred to me to ask that question, because the concept that we would have enough for everyone over the age of 18 by the end of May, or
he
I should say,
the,
no, no, by the beginning of May, is pretty stunning. I mean, that's only 6 weeks away. And so that is very exciting news, I think, for people who, like myself, have been just sort of watching people around me get vaccinations and just waiting, like, let's do this. And of course, a lot of it has to do with you feel more confident in sending your kids to school. your kids feel more confident in going to school. I mean, I imagine that many parents are feeling the same thing. My children's, particularly my teenagers' anxiety about COVID is the idea that she could give it to one of her parents. Because generally for younger people, it's not, there can be horrible cases, but generally not as dangerous. And so this is, it's good news. And so Biden's on television last night. What do you do? And this, we were talking about this before the show. We would have joked about something like this a year ago. The idea that the conservative media, and really the distinction between the conservative media and the conservative movement and the Republican Party, there really is none. I mean, I that's been my contention for quite a while, but now it doesn't even seem to be even like a remotely controversial statement. And so what is their response to the president coming out there and basically saying, all we keep doing is beating the expectations that we had set for ourselves, which people thought maybe were a little bit ambitious to begin with, right? I mean, no one said when Biden announced 100 million shots in 100 days, no one was like, that's easy.
It was what Biden announced last night was objectively excellent news. If you're looking at the things not through a partisan perspective and you're trying to be intellectually honest about what we're seeing, it was objectively good and impressive news in terms of the vaccination ramp up.
Absolutely. And of course it is, you know, the 1 year, it's being marked as the 1 year anniversary of the pandemic essentially hitting the United States. Not maybe not technically, but in terms of the way that everybody started to experience
it. Today's the 12th. I mean, I think I was supposed to leave for vacation the next day. Trump declared a national emergency and we canceled our flights in the morning. So I think that might actually be.
Yeah, well, that was basically it.
Yeah.
And so what would you expect a president of the United States to do? Well, they would mark the fact that we have lost now a little more than 530,000 people to this disease. I mean, that is an extraordinary number of people. Here is how Fox and Friends is going to try and digest that information and allow their audience to feel like somehow Joe Biden is aggrieving them by reminding them of this.
That's the story that should have been written. And we don't need to go over the 500,000 dead. We had that moment. Let's talk about the future moving forward. Every time he has a chance to praise the previous administration, he not only doesn't praise, he kicks them in the groin.
Any previous administration? Is that what he was trying to say there? Or is he trying to say the previous administration?
I think he's trying to say the previous administration. But I mean, how is it that they the whiplash involved in, like, do you remember who the previous administration was? Right. I mean, like, I happen to think it's good politics to call out the administration prior to yours if it's from the other party and they have failed.
And, so Trump never held back.
Well, that's my point.
Obama.
That's,
and if Obama presided over 500,000 people, or I guess it was, I don't know what the number was when Trump left office, but close to that, hundreds of thousands of people dying in the pandemic, we'd never hear the end of it.
Oh, and I will say that I also think that it happens to be perfectly justified to blame Donald Trump for the extraordinary amount of people that have died, even out since he's been out of office, frankly, because the time to prepare and to save the lives that have died over the past month was 8 months ago, 9 months ago, 12 months ago, 15, 16, 24 months ago. I mean, every step of the past 36 months, whether it was him removing from the National Security Council the pandemic response team, whether it was pulling people out of China, whether it was cutbacks, whether it was denying the existence of the virus, whether it was saying you don't need to wear masks, whether it was saying this wasn't real, it's just going
to
go away, whether it was
bleach,
inject bleach
into you, your body,
hydroxychloroquine or whatever,
hydroxychloroquine.
I mean,
we should forget about that altogether.
Coming out in front of the White House and saying everybody's going to get the treatment that I got, which of course nobody got, every step of the way, leaving the White House and not telling people that he got vaccinated.
Because he wanted to appeal to anti-vaxxers.
Every step of the way, he juiced the death that came from this and the injury. Every single step of the way during his administration. So there will not be a death from this pandemic. Maybe not all after he's left office, maybe not all 6 months from now, but there will not be at least one death that wouldn't be attributable to his both actions and failure to act. And
Kilmeade can't reckon with that, or does he's paid not to reckon with that, right? Which is also, I love the part, just as an aside, where he starts off, we already talked about the 500,000 dead. We already had the vigil. Come on. How many times do we talk about the four people that died in Benghazi? It was four people, right? And now they're moving on from, they talked about that endlessly. I mean, it's just the hypocrisy is obvious, but the callousness and I don't know, just complete compartmentalization of this is also shocking. Oh, we already got done with talking about the 500,000 people plus that died in this country due to COVID. Let's be positive, you know, good vibes, man.
It's extraordinary to me. I mean, hypocrisy, I feel like, undersells it. I hope that I don't even know what they must do. What the size of the Brinks truck that they would have to roll up into my backyard to get me to sort of just blow off the death of 500,000 people to complain about the fact that Joe Biden implied that Donald Trump had some responsibility for this. I mean, it is stunning. But we got to take a break. Come back. We'll be talking to David Dayan, the executive editor of the American Prospect. It is day 51. Of the Biden administration. Good time to assess how he's doing on those first 100 days. Of course, we'll talk about that and more back in a second. Should tell you, folks, that today's show is sponsored by the place where I get all of my cleaning supplies. Grove.co. It's the Grove Collaborative. So most people know the value of using natural products in your homes. You don't want your pets to get sick. You don't want your kids to get sick. You don't want to get sick. And you don't need to have non-natural products because they have really effective, good quality products that are just simply not as dangerous for you. But where do you find them? Where do you find them in one place? One-stop shopping. It's Grove Collaborative. It's an online marketplace. It delivers healthy, home, beauty, and personal care directly to you, these type of products. Grove Collaborative takes the guesswork out of going green. You can browse the site for thousands of, like I say, personal care products, beauty products, home products. They're all guaranteed to be good for you, your family, your home, the planet. You don't have to shop at multiple places. You don't have to search all over line. You can join over 2 million households who have trusted Grove Collaborative to make their homes a happier and healthier place. Plus, shipping is fast and it is free on your first order. For me, I do the whole Mrs. Myers thing on a couple of products, and I go for, you know, lemon scents. I'm very scent sensitive. People know this. But I get all of my seventh generation unscented dishwashing liquid, unscented hand washing liquid, as you noticed, Emma,
yes.
In here. Also, I'm really big into now, they have an orange concentrate that is a Grove branded orange concentrate cleaner. And you buy your own, they sell you these, you can buy on the Grove Collaborative, the glass bottles. I've also done this also for my hand things all at home. They're all the dispenser bottles, and I buy the big because I ain't going through that again. I'm not running out of hand soap.
Yeah.
But the they have a great orange concentrate cleaner. They have tons of products. This was the place where I would get toilet paper back in the tough days. Check it out. You will not be disappointed. It's super convenient. Order right on your phone. Boom, bang, boom. The whole thing is quick. Also, we get our for the cat poop, the compostable bags.
Just quickly, I would love to see you react to being in a car with one of those air fresheners.
I leave. I get out.
The trees?
I get out.
Okay.
Look, making the switch to natural products has never been easier. For a limited time, when our listeners go to grove.co/majority, it's grove.co/majority, you will get to choose a free gift with your first order of $30 or more. But you have to use our special code. Go to grove.co/majority. Get your exclusive offer. That's grove.co/majority. And also, of course, this program sponsored by sunsetlakecbd.com. It is the place to get your CBD, folks. They are a mostly employee-owned farm. Or I should say, a business on a farm that diversified. They still deliver dairy to Ben and Jerry's up in outside of Burlington, Vermont. They use integrated pest management, no pesticides, 100% organic fertilizer. They work with the University of Vermont to do regenerative agriculture practices. Just a great company, and their products are even better. I use the salve this morning. I use it for sore muscles, but for me, I use it on my skin. They have a CBD and Arnica salve. Tincture is helping me get to sleep every night.
I had the fudge 2 nights ago.
That's pretty good.
Yeah.
The CBD infused fudge is excellent. They have great infused CBD coffee, different roasts at different time. You got to check it out on their site. And then they have smokables. They have pre-rolls and little buds, and Matt's favorite. What are the smalls, right, Matt?
Yeah, the smalls, the pre-stemmed little nuggets that you can put right in your grinder. Really convenient.
Folks, check it out. You will not be disappointed. Use their coupon code LEFTISBEST, one word, LEFTISBEST, get 20% off sunsetlakecbd.com. They've got gummies. Check it out. It is really, the products are great, and it's a great company, and they are very supportive of the show and fans of the show. sunsetlakecbd.com, LEFTISBEST. All right, let's bring in the executive editor of the American Prospect, David Dayan, who has been doing an ongoing for the past 51 days, maybe more, ongoing first 100 days newsletter about the Biden administration. David, welcome back to the program.
Hi, how are you doing?
I'm doing great. How are you doing?
All right.
Glad to hear it. So, all right. So, David, let's talk about the this $1.9 trillion COVID relief bill. This is, where do you put this on the BFD scale, on Joe Biden's BFD scale?
It's pretty up there. I mean, it's about a year's worth of policy in one piece of legislation. It has not only obviously the relief elements in terms of the direct payments and unemployment benefits and things of that nature, but there's a significant amount of public investment in this bill. And you know, it's interesting, Larry Summers, his you know, among his list of complaints, which were less about the bill and more about not being selected for a top administration job, But the big one, one of the big ones that he said was, there isn't, I'm good with investment. I would be fine with public investment in a piece of legislation right now, but this isn't that. And that's simply not true. There's a significant opportunity for investment from state and local government in infrastructure systems, for investment in schools to improve ventilation and do all sorts of various learning environment improvements. There's $7 billion for community health centers. There was only $11 billion over 5 years in the entire Affordable Care Act. There's $30 billion for transit. I mean, there is a significant amount of investment in this bill that is going to be ongoing and is going to have multiplier effects for many years down the road.
All right. So I think there were people who were hoping for this bill, and let's just start here because we should just address it. People were hoping for some structural changes, right? Like the $15 minimum wage and then I think there was some I wouldn't call them structural changes in terms, but maybe philosophical ideas of like no means testing on the checks, and them being $2,000, I think more of a political concern than anything else. I mean, in terms of money that is actually being delivered to people, the fact that people are getting a $1,400 check as opposed to a $2,000 check is, in many respects, it seems to me, offset by the enormous amount of money that people are going to be getting if they have kids, the subsidies that go up in terms of the ACA, 100% subsidies of COBRA. I mean, put that into context, the lack of structural changes, but what the implications of those of the investments will do within those structures that haven't changed?
Well, I think what you're seeing is a recognition that 90s style welfare reform failed, and the need for supporting families in particular, but also the working class and even the middle class, is an important function of government. And unfortunately, we were locked into this process whereby you could only, in this bill, extend those types of needs to add to the welfare safety net for a year. But I know that the administration is extremely interested in extending those permanently, particularly the child allowance. Whether they make it a tax credit or bring it out and just make it a full allowance and put it in the Social Security Administration. But I think what you're seeing is a difference in the philosophy of government. And so now, in the future, I think that's something that needs to be carried through, because obviously, as you said, the changes to the child tax situation is only for a year. The changes to the subsidies in the ACA, preventing what has been known as the subsidy cliff, where if you made a certain amount of money per year, you would be responsible under the exchanges to pay as much as 20% of your income in insurance premiums. Now that is down to the point where everybody is paying no more than 8%, 8.5%. So that's only available for 2 years. The unemployment changes, which I think ought to be made permanent, increasing the eligibility of who is eligible for unemployment, including freelancers and gig workers, that is only available until September. So you've created this sort of pop-up safety net where you've made some philosophical beliefs that people, low-income people, people with families need support, but you've only done it for a certain period of time. And so I think that now that philosophical argument has been won on the side of, yes, we need the public sector to get involved. The task now is to carry that forward.
That's a great point. And I guess the child allowance is, I think, you know, a structural change. I mean, the idea that the U.S. government is going to be paying provide people support for raising a child, and $300 per child a month for 6 to 18 year olds, and $360 maybe for under six. So give me a sense of all right. So let's put this into context. It implies, at the very least, or is maybe explicit, that there is a fundamental shift. I mean, people are talking about this as the end of the Reagan era of thinking. How durable is that end? I mean, you don't know. That's it.
Hello?
Hello, can you hear me? David?
Yeah.
Oh.
Yeah, I can hear you.
How durable do you think that is? I mean, how durable is that? Are they going to be at the end? Like, well, we're past COVID. The economy is booming. I'm just hypothetical. The economy is booming. We don't need to do these things anymore. Or do we learn the lesson that, hey, this actually, the economy is booming because we did this. This is making people suffer left. Like, that's a good thing. We should not change that.
It's entirely based on what happens within the next year. Whether or not we carry this forward and make these things permanent features of our safety net or not. People like to quote this thing that Biden said, I think, at a fundraiser, where he said, nothing will fundamentally change. So in this bill, something did, in fact, fundamentally change, and it was this change in philosophy, this change in what the public needs are. But it's only a temporary shift, and it won't be a fundamental shift until we make that decision. Now, I think the administration believes that they have a really good argument to make once they have now given the families this advanceable support. So instead of waiting for their taxes, they get it every month. The child tax credit existed, right? It was a $2,000 per child tax credit. But now it's, first of all, available up to age 18. Second of all, under six, it's, you get more money for those individuals. And third of all, it's advanceable. So you get a monthly check rather than having to wait once a year in your taxes. So once people are getting that check, it's going to be, the theory is, it's going to be very hard for the political system to say, you're not getting that check anymore. It's an effective tax increase. I mean, because this is the child tax credit, Republicans would have to be increasing taxes on working families, on all families in America. That's the theory, is that's going to be very difficult to take away from people. And the same thing for the new Affordable Care Act subsidies, which the administration absolutely wants to make permanent. In theory, that makes sense. In practice, it's very easy to not pass a bill, right? I mean, it's very easy to just continue gridlock on the course that it's on. It is not sort of preordained, let's say, that just because not doing something will cause a bad action doesn't mean that bad action won't take place. So I think it's going to be a difficult fight. Now, are they going to use reconciliation to make permanent the child tax credit or these subsidies? You can do that as long as you pay for it. So they chose not to pay really for much of anything in this bill. There are a few minor tax increases in this bill on wealthy families, mostly because they put a cap. They said this is a $1.9 trillion budget reconciliation. And they actually went over that cap, so they had to do a little bit of tax increases, revenue increases to offset that But if you offset the whole cost, then yes, you can make this permanent in reconciliation. But you have to choose what those offsets would be. While it's simple in theory, getting every member of the Democratic Senate caucus on board for a specific set of tax increases that would fund this specific thing, because there's this idea out there that these offsets are finite, right? And I don't want to use them on that. I want to use them on climate, or I want to use them on education, or I want to use them on healthcare. I don't want to use it on this child. So I think that's going to be where some of the difficulty lies here, is finding a mix of these particular offsets. I mean, everybody, it seems, in the Democratic caucus wants to continue this child tax credit program. There are differences of opinion as to how you administer it. But the question is going to be, are you going to be able to find the offsets and actually get it done?
You know, what strikes me is that we have, on one hand, this sort of idea with the child tax credits, with the ACA subsidies, that once the American public, and I do think, like, getting the check on a monthly basis is going to change the way I think that Americans view their government, because this is, you know, it's not for a disability. It's not because you've been paying into the system and you're retiring. It's because I have a child. And like the rewiring that goes on, I think, in the mind of an American citizen who's like, wait a second, my government's supporting me for something that is like my choice to have a child, and to, you know, is recognizing that, like, hey, this represents some financial challenges. I think that's it's going to be fascinating to see what happens there. But what's also interesting to me is that if policymakers perceive and must have that same sort of notion in their head, that's why they think this is going to be a durable policy and they're going to be able to come back and deal with it in a year. It's the opposite for the COBRA subsidies. Right. Like they are subsidizing COBRA. If you lose your job, and correct me if I'm wrong here, if you lose your job, you're fired or you're laid off, you would be responsible for both ends of your health insurance. You would be responsible for what your employer paid and what you paid. And that's COBRA. Now, the U.S. government is going to step in and pay both sides of that for you. So you're going to get 100% free health insurance. And it is the most inefficient way to provide that, it seems to me, from the government's perspective. It's still great if you're getting into your health insurance. But from the government's perspective, it's the most costly way to do it. You could slide people to be, say, like, here's your Medicare card. You're on Medicare now. But they didn't want, it's almost like the opposite. They didn't want to rewire the American citizen's brain in that way, just in the child tax credit way. Yeah. I mean, what do you make of that, David?
Yeah, I don't think that's going to be renewed for precisely the reason you're talking about. I think that there is a significant portion of progressives in Congress who have no interest in continuing that on anything but an emergency basis. I mean, the theory behind it right now is that you have millions of people out of work, and still a year into this crisis, 700,000 people every week go on to first-time unemployment claims. And so you have this tremendous amount of churn. And so on a temporary basis, it makes sense. Let's not compound the problem here when we have so many people going on to unemployment also hitting them with this huge health insurance premium that they have to figure out in their life. Let's just cover that cost. That makes sense right now. In the future, I don't think it does, because it's extremely inefficient, as you say, and it conflicts with a lot of priorities that progressives have for how you begin that process of rewiring the American brain, and saying that, yes, the government has a role to play, not only in providing and making sure families aren't falling into poverty because they have children, but also the government has a responsibility on health insurance. I think what is done on the subsidy end that really does guarantee affordable options of health coverage for everyone, no matter your socioeconomic status, I think that is a move in a certain direction. We had a piece by John Walker this week that talks about that as really a sea change. And even the Obamacare itself did not guarantee affordable health care. It guaranteed it for a subset of people. But if you made the wrong amount of money, the quote unquote wrong amount of money, it was not going to be affordable for you. And so, and indeed, there were some people who for whom it was unaffordable, where they were waived. If you remember this in the Affordable Care Act, they were waived from the individual mandate penalty, right? They said, oh, it's not affordable to you, so you don't have to pay a penalty for not getting health insurance. Well, that's essentially ceding the point that some insurance is going to be unaffordable for some people. And that has been corrected in this bill for 2 years, saying that everybody is going to be offered coverage that is affordable in some way. Now, is it the best coverage that it can be? No, and that's why I think we have to improve where we can improve with a public option or with moving more people onto Medicare or Medicaid or federalizing Medicaid so that everybody gets the same opportunities no matter what state you live in, and you're not subject to the whims of Republican governors who don't want to expand it.
Right.
This bill also tries to bribe states to expand Medicaid. It gives more money than needed. It's right. Not going to work. It's completely not going to work. But a state that hasn't expanded Medicaid would actually be given money to expand it. Like, no, they would get more than 100%.
They would make money. It is like
they would make money on the deal.
But they've signaled.
Yeah, they would make money on the deal.
20 years at this.
No one's going to do it.
The Republican governors are never going to do it.
That's amazing.
Which is why I think it is unbelievably important. We have a piece today also, I'm just plugging my pieces, by Alex Salmon, saying that this proves, like, you got to federalize Medicaid. There's no reason that the fact of where you live should penalize you in terms of your ability as a poor person to get health coverage. That could be done through a reconciliation
process. I don't want to prevent people from going and reading Alex's piece, but just explain to people just briefly, Medicare is federal program, but Medicaid is, it's not block granted, but it is money that is given to states by the federal government. And then they basically are in charge of how they will implement these programs, who they will cover, et cetera, within certain federal parameters, as opposed to the federal government, just you going down to, like, it's part of Social Security Administration or something like that. That's basically
right. It's a federal state. It's a federal state partnership. And there are some guardrails around how the states have to administer it. But they have pretty substantial variance within those guardrails. And so if you live in Texas or Florida and you make something just above the poverty line, up to 138%, you do not get eligibility for Medicaid. Whereas if you live in California or New York, you do. And that is just sort of an accident of the state in which you live and the public policy decisions that state has made. And so why not make this even across the entire population? This is true of unemployment as well. The unemployment system is administered by the various states. There's substantial variation into how well managed those unemployment systems are. Why not federalize that? This bill gives $130 billion for education funding and actually increases the per capita share based on whether or not that school district is a poor school district. And that is a form of federalization in a sense, in terms of the government playing a role in topping up those state budgets, which usually the state and localities are take control in terms of who is in charge of funding education. So there are a lot of ways where the logic sort of this system and the way in which this has gone through, it might make a lot of sense to federalize these state administered programs.
And to be clear, that would involve basically getting rid of the filibuster and convincing 50 Democratic senators that we should do that, right? I mean, this would have to be by statute. This isn't one of those the executive branch can simply do this. We'll have plenty of time to talk about what are the chances of the filibuster reform and the talking filibuster. I think we'll get a sense of that probably in the run up to HR1. Do you have a sense of, before, because I want to move on to the CRA, you just wrote about that, but do you have a sense of what the timing is for HR1? It's been passed by the House. HR1 now goes to the Senate. It's S1. This is a massive sort of election protection bill, if you will, to protect the franchise of people, and also sort of an anti-corruption, I guess, bill, you could say, good government bill. What is the, have you heard anything in terms of timing in the course of your reporting?
Congress and the White House really went all in on the American Rescue Plan. And this was what they were really pushing towards for the last 2 months from a legislative standpoint. The only other thing that has really been on the agenda in the Senate has been nominations for various executive branch positions. The House has teed up all this legislation that they had passed 2 years ago and moved it over to the Senate so that the Senate has the opportunity to pass it. The two things that I've heard about from Senate aides that it seems legislatively the Senate is going to move forward on is something to do with China and particularly technology research or semiconductor research to bring back certain manufacturing back from China. Number one, and number two, there's going to be hearings and probably at least a procedural vote on background checks on gun safety legislation. So neither of those things are HR1. And I think the White House is very concerned right now with touting the American Rescue Plan they're doing an event, I believe, today and throughout the next couple of weeks. That is their primary focus, I think, over the next month. So I don't really have a sense of where HR1 falls in that. I think Schumer is very interested in this China bill, and I think he's interested in showing something on guns. Maybe HR1 comes down the road. I also believe that there's going to be a process on the minimum wage, probably something on the order of setting a deadline for bipartisan groups to work out some sort of solution on the minimum wage, maybe by the end of May, maybe by June. I've heard this floated. It's not really definitive yet. But the idea would be that there would be some sort of process that says to centrist Democrats and Republicans who are interested in getting something done, you have 2 months to figure this out. Now figure it out, and then we'll put something on the floor. HR1 has not gotten a lot of discussion in the talks that I've had with people in the Senate. I do believe it will happen, but I think that it's almost a cart before the horse situation where they're trying to figure out the filibuster before they figure out HR1. Or at least what their next move would be. Because obviously, when you put HR1 on the floor, it's going to be blocked. So they almost want to figure out, okay, what do we do? What's step two before they get to step one and start scheduling it?
So I'm just curious about the politics behind this China bill, right? Because you hear that there's a lot of rumblings from the right that Biden is not tough enough on China, and I think that that may be their next route that they go to critiquing him, since they seem lost in terms of the right-wing media. But Chuck Schumer's pushing this. From what I've seen, it has to do with 5G capabilities, building some of that up. That's some of what's being floated here. Could that be tied into infrastructure and what's being discussed with this China bill? Because to me, it just seems like you're, you know, trying to get ahead of right-wing critique, which is never the best strategy.
This particular bill is a holdover from previous years. It's a bipartisan bill between Schumer and Todd Young, who's a Republican from Indiana. It offers $100 billion over 5 years, mainly for the National Science Foundation, to increase research that could be converted into domestic industrial policy, essentially. I don't think that the White House is opposed to it in any way. I think they see it as part of their overall plan to bring back manufacturing and to ensure that supply chains are robust in the United States. I think that they don't see it really as in conflict with the broader infrastructure package. It's almost an add-on. And they'd be happy to have any kind of bipartisan thing pass. This is Schumer. I don't want to call it freelancing, but it's been an initiative of his for some time. And he has a Republican partner. And so, you know, it seems like a logical step for him. I don't know that it is necessarily kind of a direct challenge to the right. I actually think that where you're going to see conservatives go over the next couple months is more on the subject of the border, particularly with increases in child migration right now, unaccompanied minors. You are seeing increases there. We actually had one of our reporters, Marsha Brown, down at the border this past week, and she saw actually a bit of a more orderly process in terms of emptying out some of these camps that have been set up along the border for people who were seeking asylum but were forced to remain in Mexico. Those people are gradually being allowed to access the United States. The rest of the border is actually closed through a public health order called Title 42, which allows the government to essentially close the border and push everybody back. But unaccompanied minors are not incorporated into that policy. And that is why you're seeing increases in unaccompanied minors. And I think that that is where the right is going to look to say, here, there's a crisis, there's a caravan on the border and things like that. So I don't think the China bill is necessarily a response to the right. I think the China bill is something Schumer has been interested in for a while, and he's trying to find something with bipartisan support.
In infrastructure, I mean, I should say supply chains became a big issue, obviously, in the first couple of months of the pandemic. And I think that focused everybody there. All right, we have just a few minutes left. I want to talk about the CRA. This is the Congressional Review Act, and it was used very effectively, it seems to me, by the Republicans when they first came in four and a half years ago. This allows Congress to reverse an executive action that was proffered, I think, within 6 months of six working, right? Is it? I mean, it's hard to.
It's 60 legislative days.
Right.
And, that's kind of an impossible thing to really put into practice. But my understanding is it's any regulation that the Trump administration finalized after August 20th. I forget the exact date, but it's sometime in mid to late August of last year.
And Congress can not only reverse it, but when they reverse it, it then creates a new threshold to reinstate it, where you need two-thirds of Congress, right? Is that not right?
My sources tell me that that's a little bit overblown. The language in the Congressional Review Act says that nothing substantially the same can be added, promulgated unless Congress gives its assent. And there is, I don't think there's a threshold like that that you're talking about, two thirds. It just says that Congress needs to give the go ahead. In other words, a regulatory agency can't do it on their own. But there's pretty decent wiggle room in there. And in fact, you know, as you said, Trump used this 16 times during 2017, because the only time you're going to use something like this, right, is during a changeover in administration. Joe Biden isn't going to sign a piece of legislation that overturns one of Joe Biden's regulations. So the only time to use it is during this changeover. Trump used it, and in two occasions, the regulatory agency did put together a regulation that was similar, maybe not substantially the same, but similar to the regulation they got rid of. So that should not be seen as a barrier here. Some people on the Hill are talking about that in those terms, like we can't do Congressional Review Act things because then it ties the hands of the regulators and we don't want to do that. Well, that's not really true. So that should not be seen as a barrier. So, but here's the state of play. So it is now March 12th. In order to meet the considerations and get the fast track support, because the important thing about this is you only need 50 votes. This is one of the only pieces of legislation where you only need 50 votes in the Senate to get this passed. So you can overturn regulations from the Trump era that were done after August of last year with a simple majority. And there's nothing else like this right now. I mean, the reconciliation bill is done. There's another one maybe on the way, but that's going to take some time. So this is the thing that you can do on the floor of Congress right now. Congress has, and this is any member, until April 4th of this year to introduce Congressional Review Act resolutions so that they qualify for this process. To date, zero of them have been introduced. Nothing has been introduced right now. And there's only a couple weeks left here. Congress goes on recess, at least the House does, at the end of March. So House members, AOC, all of these House members have basically 2 weeks. Now, it's not hard to write one of these regulations, one of these resolutions. All you basically have to say is, I repeal this regulation. I mean, that it's a one-page bill. It doesn't require a lot of drafting. But they only have until April to introduce it, and they only have until around mid-May to get them passed. So this is kind of a red alert thing. If you want to make some legislative progress and pass something with only 50 votes, you need to do it right now.
Why haven't they? Is it really just like, is it possible that there's a member of Congress watching us right now going like, oh, geez. I'm not being facetious. Like, I think people don't necessarily realize that, like, it's sort of like that, right? Yeah. We have this $1.9 trillion bill, and we're still finding out things that are in it. I mean, right. And part of that is because it's called to the attention of a member of Congress who may sit on a committee. They decide this is my pet thing. I'm going to put that in. But it's not like they're walking around with this knowledge of it. It is people like yourself and other writers and think tanks who say you can do this and you also need to do it by then. And that's what alerts them to this. I mean, that's what, like, when people ask, like, how can we push our representatives? It's almost just sort of like making enough noise about something that's fairly obvious so that they pay attention to it because they got a lot of things on their plate.
Well, I mean, I think that's true to an extent. In this case, I think that the focus of the American Rescue Plan was certainly one factor here, that it took up a lot of oxygen. I know that Congress is aware of this. I mean, I talked to Representative Raul Grijalva last year, He's the chair of the Natural Resources Committee. I asked him about this, and he said, "Oh yeah, we're coming up with ideas of what to do." I think there's sort of larger strategy sessions taking place where they're trying to figure out which ones have the votes to pass, and that's the ones that they will introduce. I don't think that's the best policy, actually. I think you just introduce a bunch of these bills. It doesn't mean they have to go on the floor, but that's seemingly the way that they're going about it. And I am concerned that we're not going to see a lot of action on this front, where it's I mean, these are legitimate things. They're the Coalition for Sensible Safeguards came up with, I believe, 28 different possibilities here of pieces of regulations that could be overturned. And they're significant. There are things like a rule that Trump put together to put cost-benefit analysis and change the calculation of that in environmental legislation, so that it's much easier to make environmental legislation or regulations go forward. If you repeal this, it would be easier. Obviously, Trump was making it much, much more difficult. There's a rule called the True Lender Rule. And what this allows is non-bank online payday lender companies to what they call rent a bank, so that they can get the protections of federal preemption, so that they can charge a lending rate at any rate that they want, any interest rate that they want, and not be bound by state systems that sometimes limit interest rates to, say, 36%. Annual percentage rate. So these would be much higher than 36%. These would be 200%, 300%, 400% interest rates that you get in online payday lending. And it would be allowable if this regulation is allowed to stand, where they can say, oh, we routed it through a federal bank and the federal bank is allowed to do that. So there are very consequential regulations that you can deal with here. And it's a little bit baffling to me that Congress has not even taken the initial step,
right,
to try to get this done.
All right. Lastly, 50 days in, just got a minute or two here. Give me your sense of the appointments. We had some very good appointments on the Federal Trade Commission. Tim Wu, Lena Khan. In terms of antitrust, I know that's, but give me your sense of, like, you know, how are progressives doing in that respect? You know, we can see what's happening on like a cabinet level, but backfilling in those positions is really important, because these are the people who are making the sort of the day to day, decisions. We just got about a minute and a half.
Yeah. I mean, I think it's still not fully baked. It's still, there's some incompletions there. Even with Lena Khan getting an open seat on the Federal Trade Commission, it's still the case, despite that, that there's one empty seat that hasn't been filled because Rohit Chopra is leaving the Federal Trade Commission to run this Consumer Financial Protection Bureau. So Lena's is, that's a tremendous thing that is happening, but the swing seat, the third seat, will actually tell the tale of what the Federal Trade Commission will be empowered to do. And you see this across the government. I mean, obviously cabinet positions are in place, but in these lesser positions, more obscure positions, not lesser necessarily, the jury's still out.
Jury's still out. I'll take that. David Dayan, always a pleasure. Folks can, I cannot recommend, well, heading over the prospect for all of it, frankly, but your first 100 days newsletter, if I could change anything, I would move you to Nova Scotia so that I could get it just a couple hours earlier in the day.
Aside from that, there you go.
I can't tell you how much I appreciate your work, and thanks for coming on.
All right. Thanks a lot.
All right, folks, going to take a quick break. We'll be right back. Wrap this up. End of the week. So it's Friday. We have passed a $1.9 trillion relief bill. People are going to get checks, or really, they're just gonna, it's going to pop in their account, $1,400 over the next week or so. In July, people will start getting the monthly payments for their kids. By between now and then, everybody who's over 18 and wants a shot supposedly will get one. And that's it.
It's pretty good news week in terms of just good things happening. The
yes.
bill being passed.
A little bit of a change.
Shots. I know. It's hard to reckon with. It's hard to get used to.
It is a little bit.
It's hard to see. Difficult to digest because we're so conditioned. Democrats learning from past mistakes.
Hope springs eternal. Months ago I said we will have a better sense of things by mid-March, and we have a better sense. We don't have a full picture, and we may not have that like David Dayen suggested for another 9 or 12 months. But we will see. Keep plugging. We will see you guys on a Monday. Have a great weekend, except for those people who are sticking around for the fun half. We will see you very shortly. Cuomo having a press conference today at 1 p.m. But what is Brendan? Is it just his like COVID press conference or what?
Yeah, Washington Post's Josh Dossi is reporting that it's a normal COVID briefing call, but I'm going to keep an eye on it. But yeah. We're also 13 years to the day that Elliot Spitzer resigned.
Whoa, is that right?
What? Yeah.
I mean, I can't imagine that anybody in the governor's office is like, let's just make this clean. Let's just make this a day that, you know, people.
We want to link Cuomo with Spitzer even more.
Yeah.
We should have a day like that in America. There should be more resignations, and mainly I'd like to, for, you know, personal scandal stuff is one thing, but for incompetence and failure in public office, it'd be a nice thing that I think Japan, they might resign a little bit more or something like that. Resign is good.
I mean, Spitzer, I'm of two minds, frankly, because I think there's some he had some major problems in his personal life.
Huh.
One could say. Significant ones, but place this 10 years ago, would have been, it was 2011, right? So here is, I mean, this is a guy who really would have, who could have had a national platform at one point and, would have done so with his sort of, contentious relationship with banks and his politics were pretty good. His not so good.
New York loves to churn out politicians who could have made hay more on a national stage but choose to shoot themselves in the foot. Like, yeah, Cuomo was terrible, but he had aspirations to run for president. Spitzer, and then, of course, you know, Anthony Weiner, too.
I think Spitzer, but Spitzer's, I think, politics significantly better than Cuomo's.
No, 100%. But they both were governor. That's the parallel.
Yep. Well, that would be a nice symmetry. I don't think that's going to happen. Folks, just remember that it is your support that makes this show possible. You can become a member at jointhemajorityreport.com. A lot of people towards the end of COVID, out of work, worried about finances. If you are not one of those people, your support of this program, deeply appreciated. Jointhemajorityreport.com. If you are one of those people, but you want the fun half, send us an email at majorityreporters@gmail.com. Have a little bit of patience. Sometimes it takes us a while to get there, but we will work something out with you. We will not lock anybody out of the show for finances. Jointhemajorityreport.com or just send an email, majorityreporters@gmail.com. And, of course, check out the AM Quickie and justcoffee.coop, fair trade coffee, tea, or chocolate. Use the coupon code MAJORITY. Get 10% off. Don't forget, Matt, what do you got going on the Matt Lekian universe?
Yeah, last night we had Matt Karp on Left Reckoning to talk about his Gilded Age piece. And among other things, we talked about this COVID relief and sort of the return of material politics, but not class politics. So you have a really generous bill that's generous both to people and also, say, like private insurance with like the COBRA stuff, for instance. So we talk about that. Check that out, patreon.com/leftreckoning to access the post game where we talk about Piers Morgan storming off in solidarity with the Queen.
I want to. I'm glad Francesca's here with us today because we could talk about that. I hadn't realized the whole story. I missed the whole story about
which one? The monarchy? The Queen? Meghan? Where do we start?
I didn't. First of all, I wasn't clear on who Meghan Markle was. And know that Piers Morgan actually quit his job, and I didn't realize that he had some ongoing obsession with her. I mean, none of it, all of it, sort of escaped me. But
I didn't know the obsession part until very recently that he was this obsessed with Meghan Markle.
I had no idea. I had no idea. Francesca Fiorentini, the host of the Bituation Room.
That's right. What's going on, Sam? Hi, Emma. Hi. Hey, Matt. Anyone else trying to have a get pregnant in the next month so they can cash in on the child tax credit? Is that just
not me? But that's you, I think, right? You responded publicly and said that. How does your boyfriend feel about that?
I think he's on board. I think we're look, it's a good a time as any. Let's just do it. I mean,
July, you could catch. I mean, you'd have to move quickly.
It's in a month. Yeah, I got a month.
Yeah,
and I don't know how many eggs are really viable at this point. I'm sorry, we don't have to start off talking about that. I got a whole stand-up routine about this, but let's just say I'm concerned. So yeah, other than that, chilling.
That's good to hear. We're all just sort of, I have this sort of a sense of I just can't wait for what happens with Cuomo today, but I just don't think that's going to happen.
No.
All right. Well, so Francesca, I want to just go over some of the responses to this bill because.
Yeah.
I think Matt put it well in the way that he's sort of, dealing with it is. It provides, undoubtedly, it provides a lot of material support for people. I mean, in a way that I don't think we've ever seen, frankly, in this country, such a naked amount of support that doesn't come with a full-on giveaway. The COBRA subsidies, yes, that's true. This is not money. This is extending health insurance for people who would have lost it and it's I wouldn't call it a boon to the insurance companies, but it certainly is going to provide them with a little bit more clientele than they would have. But presumably without COVID, they theoretically all these people would be still working and they'd still be buying insurance. It's just the payment would come from a different place. But the right doesn't seem to have any response to this and to the shots. Here is, I wanted to play this, Tucker Carlson responding to Joe Biden's speech where he's like, if we do this right, folks, the lights at the end of the tunnel by July 4th, people will be able to be with your family. And
that sounds
offensive.
Outrageous.
Offensive.
At points like the Biden presidency itself. Felt a little bit like a dream sequence. The first part of the president's address described the sadness of the last year. People shut out from hospitals as their loved ones died alone. People losing hope. People losing their own businesses. Children not being able to go to school. A whole generation, the president said, of children stunted by school closures. No sense at all of how any of this happened or who backed it, but they're the president showing great empathy. His plan consisting essentially of vaccines and more vaccines. By May, he said, there will be enough vaccines for every person in America. The military will give you that shot. And if you take that shot, things potentially could get back to normal. No mention all of the people who might not want to take that shot. But the president said, if you take that shot and wear your mask and listen to Dr. Fauci, it is possible, not assured, but possible, that you might be able to gather in small groups with the ones you love for the 4th of July. We might have to rescind that right, but it's possible if you're obedient, you'll get it. Who are you talking to? This is a free people. This is a free country. How dare you tell us who we can spend the 4th of July with? Alex Berenson is a best-selling author. He joins us now with reaction, a more restrained reaction to the president's address. So, Alex, I was struck by the substance of his response to COVID, the administration's response to COVID, really is the vaccine itself.
One second. I just want to ask Francesca, and then I'll ask both of you.
Yeah, sure.
Who did Biden say that you guys have to spend 4th of July with?
Your family? How dare you think that I have a family who loves me or that I love back or that we even would hug? Could we hug? Look, this is just, this is the cultural Marxism of the left, honestly.
Forcing family get-togethers.
Can you explain, can you expand upon how it's cultural Marxism, Francesca?
Look, you know, I think it was Mao who said that revolution happens at the extension of an arm. And I'm not that good at going forward on this, but I'll get back to you. I mean, Tucker Carlson, I actually was offended by what he said to in terms of 4th of July, because I was like, I don't really like the 4th. You know what I'm saying? Like, I'm not big into the 4th. I don't know if you guys are big into the 4th. I like fireworks, not into hot dogs.
Leftist, right? Obviously.
All right, let's go. Is there more clip to this, Brendan? Yeah, I want to see
that. What do you make of that as a response?
Day in a row, this dude's been on.
Well, Tucker, it's interesting. You said surreal. The word that came to my mind was bizarro. It was a bizarro speech in this bizarro world where we're all still desperately afraid of the coronavirus, where cases haven't fallen 90% since January and hospitalization 70%, where, you know, we know exactly who's at risk from this and how most of us are at very, very low to no risk from this. You know, the world Joe Biden inhabits, and I guess.
Wait, didn't Berenson yesterday on Ingram say this thing was still a danger?
Well, he said that actually that herd immunity provides you with more protection from vaccines, and he was espousing anti-vax propaganda. So basically the only way for someone like Berenson to see people living their lives as acceptable is for them to just go maskless and not care about COVID. Like, that's it. There's no other option. That you should get COVID, so then you can have herd immunity, which provides you with protection. I mean, more than the vaccine.
We're not far off from bringing in like funeral home owners who are like, you know, there's just been a dip and it's been tough.
Yeah. Well, I mean, the funeral home industrial complex, it does have its hands in the pockets of governors like Andrew Cuomo, so maybe.
I think what's also fascinating is it's the third night in a row they brought on Berenson into prime time.
Yeah.
And
who's this fool again? Explain who he is.
Alex Berenson. I mean, I mean, he's just this guy who came out and was first a COVID denier, then sort of publicly said the idea that there would be 500,000 people dead by spring of 2021 is absurd. He was not saying it's absurd because this is going to happen in the middle of winter. That's not what his take was.
He said that in October.
Yeah. I mean, what is like ostensibly his credentials? He's just some essayist. But what's fascinating to me is that there's no way. Look, you know, they get the ratings. They can tell you who's watching and leaving every 15 minutes on these shows.
All right.
They must be know that they are actively cultivating anti-vax, anti-Fauci, the plandemic people. Do you remember the plandemic?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
That is who their audience is. And this is, you know, they're just finding any excuse they can to bring him on. How crazy was that speech where he starts off lamenting the 500,000 plus people who have died and the horrible year we had, and then sort of projecting into how we can get out of it in the future? That's just a bizarre way to approach this.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, to get offended, is the right going to boycott July 4th just out of principle? Because Biden is telling you have to celebrate independence and freedom? That's, I don't know. I'm trying to game this out here, and I feel like we're not far away from that. I actually thought it was also a really, to even give a date, to even give a day of like, you might be able to gather with people in this day. First of all, he was like, you know, two or three. Y'all, if we are vaccinated by July 4th, ragers. I'm sorry. I'm going to do all of the drugs. I apologize. Really all of them.
I actually think that they're probably internally in the White House think that it's like closer to June. I think so.
Yeah.
I think
well, they've been lowballing it this
exactly.
whole time.
They're managing expectations quite well.
First, they said that anyone who wanted a vaccine would be able to get one in, I think, July, right?
Yep,
and now it's
July,
May 1st. And so we're going to be able to, if there is a rush for vaccination, which we're seeing now, although there will be some segment of the population that doesn't, you know, kind of do their part in this area. But those are the same people that were going to be partying without masks anyway, for the most part.
That's
so
true.
It doesn't necessarily matter. But
they
yeah.
might have already gotten COVID, potentially sort of have antibodies. Who knows?
But again, the antibody protection we know now wears off. We don't know how long it takes, but we know that it wears off in some period of time. I have heard horror stories of people getting COVID twice. So that's the reality of the situation. You talk about people going crazy July 4th. It's over 50 degrees here in New York, and I anticipate people like flooding the streets and going nuts this weekend. Basically.
That's what I've anticipated. Okay. Yeah. But I keep thinking like if you'd asked me like 2 months ago, I was like, I'm going to go hog wild this summer. But now all I can think about is just like taking a nap. Because you're going to like a month nap or something, and that's it. I just like wake up and just be like, oh, that was a weird dream.
Mm-hmm.
That would be nice. Here is let's look at Tucker Carlson. They've already
made
a lot of this, but this is Tucker Carlson just looking completely perplexed by what Joe Biden is saying during this speech, which was like, this was almost like the perfect encapsulation of what Joe Biden promised.
Yeah.
I'm going to get up there. You probably will forget what I said, afterwards, but in the moment, I'm going to make you feel like I'm just like a normal human being, more or less. And nobody's going to walk away going like, you know, we're just going to get exactly what you would expect a normal human being who's president would say in the midst of a pandemic. But for Tucker Carlson, apparently, this is just like blowing his mind. Watch this. It's pretty funny.
Remember, the government isn't the capital. Of us. We the people. For you and I, that there is a tribe. And we give our hearts. We turn our hands to common purpose.
Yeah. Yeah, the way that he and Berenson, he talked about surreal and Berenson talked about bizarro, that's all they're trying to sell is that reaction shot of like that basically cultivates a QAnon alienated mindset.
Exactly.
Tucker Cam. Well, we kind of have a Sam Cam just by the nature of Zoom. When we play clips, we get to watch your reaction. Maybe Tucker's kind of stealing from the show. Right, right.
Could be.
He's furrowing his brow quite hard. You don't need to focus that hard, buddy. You don't need to focus that intensely. But he's play acting.
It's very difficult to try and find a way to be scandalized from the right by what he said. Like you rack your brain and you're like, I guess when you force me to go out and celebrate with my friends and family, but that's it. But you know, for me, the biggest problem with the speech was that he did not talk about the fact that no Republicans voted for it, which gives you sort of this like sinking feeling that when they try and take it all away. And I know you guys were talking to, you know, the very prescient David Dayen earlier, you know, that there or any of the benefits, we won't be reminded by who actually got this done and who didn't.
Well, he's trying to strike a unifying message, which is blame Republicans for anything. And the good news is that because this bill is so good, the Democrats will be able to fall back on the provisions that actually provide for people. And it won't just be the, okay, we never attack Republicans and we also don't provide anything really materially. So what's reason to vote for us. Oh, we're not as bad as the other side. This at least now, okay, this is a substantive package and people are going to get checks in their bank accounts. And so then they can mark, and the Democrats can own that. But yeah, Biden's not going to be the guy that goes after Republicans. He's still going to hope that they sign on to his infrastructure package, which maybe there's a chance. But yeah, he's the unifier. And this was the one year that 2020 where a unifier was really going to get elected.
Yeah, and of course, you know, there's going to be a year. All this stuff is going to come up, you know, in September, and some of this is going to come up in a year from now. And so it's going to be interesting to see, like, you know, how much they continue on with this stuff, carrying it into 2022. All right, so we have now played the annoyed version of a response that came from Fox and Friends, where they're like, "Ugh, how many times is he going to say 500,000 people died? We get it. I mean, come on." And then the Tucker Carlson, who thought, like, this is the most bizarre thing he's ever seen. You have a president who's like both lamenting a national tragedy and then talking about how you get out of it and going forward. That's bizarre. And now we just have Greg Gutfeld on Fox News, who's just like, "I got nothing. I'll just go with just completely stupid." Here it is.
Reiterate, saying people like this bill is like saying people like money, except you don't know where the money is coming from. It actually comes from the people. The money given to you is nothing compared to the money that they're actually taking from you over time. So don't forget that. So saying you like this bill, it's almost like saying, "I like my iPhone. I like my basketball shoes, but I really don't know where they're made in China, and I really don't know who makes them." Slave labor, right? So, but as long as you don't know where the stuff comes from, that's okay. I love foie gras until I find out how it's actually made, and I love it a little less. So how big is this bill? It's larger than the total amount paid in individual taxes in 2019. That was $1.8 trillion. So my theory on this one was, I think the Republicans blew it. They should have said, "Okay, you can have your $2 trillion, but I want to add another $2 trillion. Let's make this bill $4 trillion, because there's no difference between $27 and $29
trillion in..." Oh. Wait, so who are the slave laborers that are, like, printing your $1,400 checks? They're like Oompa Loompas?
No, his argument is, and it's really, it's a problem for him, because... But his argument is that this is coming from taxpayers, and you don't realize it when you get the $1,400 that you put $1,600 in, and
which is almost like we deserve it then.
Well, right. But the problem,
proving his own point.
Tax cut. It's a tax cut.
A, it's not true. B, I mean, this is money that is borrowed. And we know now that the deficit is that the debt is really not as nearly as relevant as we've been told for decades. There's no, you're not seeing interest rates shoot up to get people to buy loans in America. Nobody's worried that we're going to default on our debt,
which originates where your iPhone also comes from. So hey, it's all, you know.
Yeah, but it's not. I mean, the problem is that with that argument for them is that A, China holds maybe, I don't know, 10-15% of our debt, but B, they can't afford to call us on it because we're buying the iPhones.
Right.
Like, well, I mean, we're the market.
Does Greg Gutfeld have an iPhone? I'm just curious about that. Does he, if he's advocating for us to look more into the ethics of the manufacturers that produce our products, like, damn, he should really devote an entire segment to that.
Here's the problem with what he's doing, is that he's trying to say they're taking your money and mm-hmm. they're giving it to other people. But the problem that he has with that is that, like, that message is only going to work on Fox Business Channel, where their audience is about 15,000 people who can basically, you know, are in the market to buy one of those $130,000 Mercedes.
Yeah.
These are all boat dads.
86% of the country is going to get the $1,400. I don't know what percentage of the country has children, but all of them are going to get checks.
Yes.
I mean, this is the problem. The dilemma they have is that there's no, like, this is the Obama phone slush fund. They cannot racialize this. And which is why they're just going to immediately pivot to immigration. I mean, they're going to immediately pivot to a caravan. They don't have a response for it. It's just a sort of like lame sort of notion that maybe sells at like a, you know, on the Ron Paul chat board that, you know, we're all slaves and we've been enslaved in paying our taxes and that's it. And it's just not gonna fly. I mean, it's fascinating. They're just flailing around at this point. They're much better off going to Dr. Seuss.
Well, that's not saying much. I've never seen the cupboard so bare. They've got nothing.
Yeah, no, they'll go back to that. I mean, and that's the thing. That's the bigger. They'll go back to cancel culture. Gina Carano's gonna have a film. It'll be a whole thing. But yeah, there'll be more money in people's pockets. I mean, it's an argument for the universality of some of these programs, right? Like the child tax credit. Because you have people who are like, yeah, middle income Trumpers storming the Capitol who make more than $75,000, right? Who hold public office, who are in the military, et cetera. So like, we have to handhold white people in this country and men. We got to handhold the rich, and it's disgusting to say, but like, there's a certain amount of where I'm like, okay, good, child tax credit. You can at least be like, hey, already comfortable person, you're going to get COBRA subsidies, 100% of them from your like six figure job that you were doing fine in, that you could probably afford regular COBRA, which is awful anyway. But look, you're going to get this subsidy. And these are all the ways you have to like, prove this is why the Pete Buttigieg, you know, why give the rich, you know, things they can afford mentality is wrong. Because once again, handholding these people.
Well, most men like to be handheld, but Sam doesn't want to be touched.
I don't want to be touched. But emotionally handheld. Yes, of course.
Even after COVID? No.
Well, we'll see. We'll see. check back in with me after I get my shot. So, Francesca, you brought up the idea that maybe you're gonna try and get pregnant to get some of that child.
Sweet, yeah. Yes.
Refundable
tax
credit.
That's a good investment, by the way, right?
I wish Rush were still alive. You know what I'm saying? Pour one out. So he could just have me on and say, this woman, she's hawking her eggs to the highest bit. I don't know I forgot what he sounds like, but you know what I mean.
Yeah, kind of made him sound like LBJ or something. Yeah.
You could also maybe go on Ben Shapiro, who predicted folks like you would be doing stuff like this. Yes, here he is.
But Nancy Pelosi is super happy about this. Here's Nancy Pelosi yesterday saying, this is the most consequential legislation of our lifetime. She is not wrong about this, by the way. Okay, this is very consequential legislation. It sets up brand new entitlement programs that, quote unquote, only last a year, but are designed to last far longer. It creates essentially incentives, the old welfare incentives, to have kids out of wedlock because, again, you get paid by the government to have kids. Not only do you get paid by the government to have kids, there are no restrictions with regard to having a job or not having a job. There are no work requirements.
Yes.
There's nothing that encourages marriage anywhere in there.
Mm.
Not only that. Again, this is a giant bailout for states that have blown out their own pocketbooks. It is a bonanza used car sales lemon. That's all this thing is. Here's Nancy Pelosi calling it the most consequential legislation of our lifetime.
Can we pause it for 1 second?
Hi.
Wait. It's a bonanza used car lemon.
Mm. Yeah.
What is that? What is that? Anybody have an idea what that means?
Soul is so stuck in like 1958. There's calling cars lemons in that way. I mean, and bonanza.
Yeah, it's a lemon, I tell you.
Did people even know what the bonanza farms were? It was like the giant farms that like they started using big industrial sort of tractors and stuff with in the 19th century.
He's like,
that's
like,
the reference.
He's like the kid from Orphan. He you know, that movie is the horror movie. But he's 242 in that, you know, childlike physique.
I know all the words. I mean, I know what bonanza refers to, and I know what used car and what lemon means. But I don't get it. It is, there's going to be tons of bad used cars. I don't even get what his metaphor is. I mean, I think he's right about his assessment, and I hope he's right that this ends up being, you know, an ongoing support structure for families and for children. I guess there may be people out there who say, like, hey, it's worth $3,600 a year to have children. That would be insane.
But the
having had two, it's,
you know, there's going to be probably more costs than $3,600. But, you know, who's thought that far ahead? Obviously, the right is totally bad faith about they don't want you to have kids. They want you to have kids if you're pregnant, right? So anti-abortion, as Ben Shapiro is, if you want to not have a kid, then you're just a selfish woman who wants control of her own body. And then if you actually want to have a kid and be supported by the government at all, which I would argue should happen in the form of universal pre-K and other programs that are far more universal and lasting than tax credits, but hey, I'll take what I can get, then you're also selfish. It's almost like they're pro-patriarchy, almost.
These refundable tax credits are, they go up to people up to $150,000 a year. I mean, this is going to hit a ton of people. It's about as close to a universal benefit as you want. I mean, I have no problem, you know, giving it to everyone and then just clawing it back through higher tax rates. But let's hear, does Shapiro go on here from here?
Could have been on the way in, I don't know, August. Okay, the reality is that there were COVID relief packages passed all the way up in bipartisan fashion during the Trump administration. This thing was passed along pure party lines. Why? Because the pandemic is basically over. Okay, the pandemic is done. Okay, now we are spending $1.9 trillion, more money than has ever been seen by God or man. Spending money that has not yet been created. We're spending all of that money to do what? To do what? We are now actively encouraging people not to go back to work. We're providing enhanced unemployment incentives that go all the way until September. September. Are you insane? September? Again, we have the lowest rates of infection since the beginning of the pandemic. I would say at this point, most states are wide open for business. The unemployment rate in places that have remained wide open, like South Dakota, is like 3%. By the way, the national unemployment rate is 6.3%, which is not wonderful, but it's certainly not crisis levels. We're not talking about the 20% that we were at even a few months ago. Now is the time we need to spend $1.9 trillion on a bunch of nonsense. Now, naturally, this is popular. If you send people checks, that's popular. But over time, what's going to be shown is that it doesn't actually raise people out of poverty to just send them checks. That has never been a solution. The war on poverty tried this with...
Wait a second. There's just too many lies that are backing up. There are... we have had weekly new unemployment claims, nearly 800,000 people a week.
Yeah.
Second, there is an enormous amount of completely indisputable data that the first round of COVID relief in the CARES Act decreased poverty by like an extraordinary amount. I don't know what it was, like 50 or 60 or 70% or whatnot it is. This is going to reduce child poverty by nearly 50%. Here it is. Vast federal aid has capped rise in poverty, studies find. From the New York Times. I mean, it's all over the place. He's just the amount of lies. Should we let him keep going?
I just want to make this one point, though. Just the fact that he's obsessed with the government encouraging people to have babies. One, he said that the government doesn't encourage marriage, which is completely false. We've had the tax incentive for married couples for how long?
There's 1,400 rights that you get.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So that's ridiculous. And now there's these child tax credits, which decrease child poverty. And now he's lamenting that now they just want you to basically have extramarital sex and make babies. It's not about the institution of marriage. The right wing is so concerned, and I guarantee there's a Ben Shapiro segment on it, about how millennials and younger people aren't having kids at the right rate because they can't afford it. So which one is it, dude? Continue.
Absolutely.
Pop this back up.
$22 trillion worth of checks over the past several decades. It has not lowered the poverty rate in the United States. You can't just sign people checks and then hope that's going to cure poverty.
It does.
That is not how poverty gets cured.
Yes, it is.
There are steps to escape poverty, but those steps, generally speaking, are reliant on individual decision-making, like don't have kids
out of wedlock, finish high school,
and get a job. By the way, if you follow those steps, you will not spend your life in poverty.
That's bullshit. What is that? Are you familiar with the steps to getting out of poverty? Matt Brunig's done a lot of work on this bullcrap. I'll see if I can find it. It's stuff like finish high school, and it's all stuff that is pretty easy to do with like a certain level of material comfort, and things that are harder to do when you lack that.
I mean, just the recent study they did with Stockton, California, and that mayor Michael Tubbs, I think it is, or former mayor, I should say, $500 they gave in a pilot program. To people, maintained other services, should make that clear, that were available to them. That extra $500 allowed them the opportunity to do things like get nice clothes to wear to a job interview, have like an address or have transportation to get to a job interview. It helped all of these people, find work and to get out of poverty. I mean, so it's it's interesting to me that they, I don't know that I've seen an era where the rights issue set is so narrow and they have to do so much lying on basic things to push their point. Like they've ceded so much territory that they have to tell outright lies about easily disprovable things.
Not only they've ceded territory, but their ideology hasn't panned out. The neoliberal economics and shrinking the social welfare state, I mean, like you guys were talking about earlier, it doesn't work. And the scratch the surface of his argument is completely bad faith because he doesn't believe in eliminating poverty. He believes that there should be a class of people who work for $7 or $2.50 plus tips. And that, that's the way capitalism works. Sorry, buddy. And maybe one day you could be manager or maybe not. And then, yeah, maybe you lose your home. But that's the way the cookie crumbles and you didn't work hard enough. Maybe you had too many kids. Maybe you didn't have enough kids. I don't know. It's all your fault mostly. And that's the ideology. And so it's completely bad faith that they even want to eliminate poverty, which is very interesting because when this starts to work, you guys were talking about it earlier, we're going to see rubber hits the road. How much do billionaires and like even a lot of like Democratic donors, how much do they want to really help people? And how much here in California, we're shooting down gig economy legislation left and right to make sure there's just a solid class of precarious workers, that can actually never get things like healthcare and benefits and things like this. So,
yeah.
Subsidies are the big part of this relief package, right? Where you can like they're fine with making that as bureaucratic as possible, but even cracking the door on allowing Medicare to be expanded to people that aren't necessarily eligible, that's not even in the conversation. Okay, we'll give out money to however many people we want. They'll put that right back into the economy. The donor class is fine with it. But then you start talking about, wow, we're going to actually have a single-payer healthcare system, give people a little bitty taste of what Medicare can provide and be expanded so easily for. That's not going to happen.
Matt, do you have something?
Yeah, like when Sam says Ben just ignores the empirical data about what giving money to people can do for poverty, this is what he replaces it with, the success sequence, which is degree, job, marriage, baby. So if we just follow that, you'll get out of poverty, folks. Never mind that pesky money.
Debt part and the pay for the degree part.
Mm-hmm. Well, just, study hard enough to get a scholarship.
There you go.
And,
everybody,
and don't forget, pray hard enough, Matt.
Yeah. Don't ever forget prayer. Eat, pray, debt, I believe is what the book was called.
That
was funny.
Let's do this Steven Crowder thing. There's some weird stuff going down with Crowder. You know, Steven Crowder, long time, has really built an empire, a media empire on being transphobic.
Walking hand in hand with Tulsi Gabbard now these days.
Oh, is that right?
She's been on his show, and
now
she's making the whole thing. Talking about cancel culture now. Anyway, I digress.
Crowder just seems super obsessed
Oh, he took the video down?
Oh, no. We don't even have the video because...
I might be able to find...
He reposted a video that he did, I guess it was about 5 years ago, of him dressing up in women's clothes, I guess, or in wearing a wig and putting on makeup, ostensibly to show how absurd it would be if he was a transvestite, I guess. I'm not quite clear what was... Do we have a sense of like what the agenda was here? Or was it just like...
Just to wear a dress.
13.
Can I just, everyone who's like, okay, can I just say, everyone, no matter if you're like, obviously, you know, you're super left, you're liberal, you don't need to be told about trans rights, doesn't matter. Wear a dress. Put on a dress. Put on some lipstick. It will heal you. It's good for you. Even if you're super masculine, that's fine. Just never, don't live your life without doing that. Because I think that's the secret of a lot of this right-wing angst. They're so mad that some people could just comfortably wear what they want to wear. Eddie Izzard is trending right now. Eddie Izzard is trending, who came out, who became trans, who's trans, it's now she. Eddie Izzard was comfortably wearing dresses on stage, doing stand-up, crushing it for years. Wear a dress, everyone. That's my PSA.
Come on, right?
Well, I have the Crowder video. He's not in a dress in it, but he's dressed as a woman in fitness clothing.
I'm just saying, you know, Rudy Giuliani wanted to wear a dress. Any excuse, because it's a joke. It's a joke.
Well, Rudy Giuliani tucked. You guys remember that awful photo I still can't get out of my mind brain?
Yeah, yes. I don't want to think
about that. I don't know. With Crowder, I think there's something else going on there. I think Crowder just has some demons. He's got a father who's very overbearing and has put a lot of pressure on him to be, like a wrestling coach type of father, a great Santini type of guy who's put a lot of pressure on Crowder to be masculine. And Crowder has channeled that into obsessive weightlifting. It's some people, it's great. You really want to get in shape. But Crowder, just like, there seems to be just sort of, I don't know. There seems to be something that needs to come out.
Is this him?
Yeah, this is Crowder. But what's really hilarious about this, and it's one of those sort of things that like, that he sat in an editing room and goes like, this is hilarious stuff. The idea like, oh, look at, let's continue on. Like, I'm trying to still figure out what the point is of this, other than like, I know that he's got like a 12-year-old audience.
Well, but he got to put on makeup. That's the point.
Did he though? Cause I,
Yes.
I love the wedding ring there. Just like,
how are you? First timer.
Oh, is this like a Project Veritas anti-trans thing?
Everything's color branded. It's so, I feel like I stepped into Star Wars. Stairmasters
are here. It's actually everyone being cool with him, despite.
Right? Is this a Tyra Fatsuit moment? What are we seeing here?
Yeah.
I forgot my head if it wasn't attached.
He's not reflective enough to get that far, but it should be.
Just one thing, careful to your back. It can hurt your back. It's a little rounded. Just make sure it's flat. Excuse me. I just need just some help to get the weight up. And in case, I just, you know, just in case for safety, but I should be good.
Okay, that's actually impressive.
He's pretty flexible.
His stretch, yeah.
Just help lift them up.
Notice how no one's messing with him.
Perfect. Thank you. Yeah. Nice. Okay, thank you. Okay, I was good. Thank you. I just need help lifting up. I think.
Wait.
Oh, he's trying to run away. I said it was trying
wait,
to run away.
Wait, there's an alarm that goes off when you drop a weight?
He's trying to skedaddle.
Yeah, Planet Fitness.
Oh, damn, dude. That.
Enjoying his body.
I don't know. The leggings do kind of look good. I'm not going to lie. He's.
Serious.
first day, I was flagged as a lunk. They even had bright lights and giant loud sirens. After this, I was officially banned from Planet Fitness. I tried to join another location.
Wait, I want to keep hearing this. You drop the weights and...
Right, for dropping the weights.
Yeah, and if you scream at Planet Fitness, too.
Hey, I was flagged as a lunk. They even had bright lights and giant loud sirens. After this, I was officially banned from Planet Fitness. I tried to join another location, but had already been flagged as seen here.
But why are you telling me that I'm insincere? I know who you are. How do you know who I am? Are you saying that because that's a pre-transition ID? Is that why?
Have a good day, Steven.
Damn, prove his point. He just proved it. They knew he was pulling a prank. He was dropping weights. He was, like, going after people. It had nothing to do with him being a woman or being trans. That's what he was trying to... Was he trying to see if people would notice that he was dressed as a woman but was, like, lifting so much weight, man? Like, look at
him. It's freaking me out that you could be trans, lift that much weight. Like, I...
But no one said anything.
Nobody said anything to him. That's what I sort of mystifying. It's like there was a definite quality of like we got to publish it, otherwise it's going to make us look bad. But
otherwise, you walked around as a woman for no reason.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, which is definitely not like that's I did it as for the video. Like
this is sort of like a comedy misfire. Like, know what your target is. Like, what are you trying to say? What aren't you trying to say? He kind of was like pulling a Sacha Baron Cohen. Like, I could see Sacha Baron Cohen doing that. But like for Sasha's world, that would have been a fail because if you were trying to prove transphobia, no one was being transphobic to you. People were chill with you. It wasn't funny in any moment. Not at all.
Yeah, so I just want to bring up why this came up again, because for it was International Women's Day, Crowder posted this video again, and everyone was dunking on it. And I just want to bring up one here that Jack Saint was making the point you were. Steven Crowder enters a gym disguised as a trans woman to expose how trans people don't fit in with, quote, normal people. Accidentally demonstrates that almost nobody gives a shit and has to literally start throwing weights around like a child to instigate mild conflict. And Crowder responded to this by saying, outrage over a five-year-old video, cutting edge, do the ice bucket challenge next. I mean, that is an L.
That is, oh, total L. Very embarrassed, I think he was, by that whole thing. And really, I mean, this comes down to just, I think there's it is, I mean, at its core, if Crowder wasn't such an a-hole, honestly, the proper response to all of this would be sympathy, because... there's so much like confusion, I think, and sort of he doesn't know why he's doing these things, and I'm not you know, I have no insight into Crowder other than his dad, you know, is extremely domineering over him, and you can see that his father sort of follows around, make sure that he behaves himself.
Jesus.
You know,
talk about hand holding though. This is how we I mean, he's also like been responsible for sicking trolls on many, many people, destroying lives, like, you know, calling people out and making them the butt of like endless segments.
With Carlos
Maza, exactly. Right. And another, so
who's gay, people don't realize this. I mean, there's something repressed there.
Yeah. I hate that we have to be like, but like, what happened? What about his dad? I mean, that, yes, that's very, maybe he's got like some sort of right wing conservatorship where he's got to produce a certain amount of, it's like, you know, the Spears controversy, but with Crowder, I'm sure there'll be a documentary about Crowder and how he was forced to do that by his dad. Just you wait.
Yeah, you have to sympathize with the subject for a documentary like that to be compelling. I don't know if that...
I did an interview the other day that I think we're going to end up running on Peacock. There's a... doing a second hour show. It's... you know, it's sort of an experimental thing. We're seeing if it can work on that channel. And I interviewed a guy who had written a piece in The Atlantic that turned out to be sort of a cancel culture piece, which I didn't quite understand until we got into it a little bit. It's an interesting conversation I had with him. You should check it out. But this whole concept of cancel culture, right? I mean, people understand what's going on here. It is There has always been cancel culture. There is, I don't know, a better example of cancel culture. I'm sure there's more, but like, you can get fired if you're gay. You cannot get housing if you're gay.
Legally,
multiple states across the country. I mean, I don't know what constitutes canceling more than the inability to work or live somewhere, right? But this is the right has just run out of things to talk about, and people who feel like their values in some way are not held and centered in and held in regard in the esteem that they want them to be are complaining. Here is Tulsi Gabbard. What are you doing now?
So she's a part of that Rubin social media network or broadcasting thing. What's it called?
Locals. Okay.
Locals. So she's a local yokel, and she made her bread and butter by basically, you know, obviously she ran for president.
Couldn't she get on Fox News or something like that?
Yeah.
Well, I mean, I think that's what she's angling for, but I don't even know.
She not walk on to there. I'm surprised by it. But here she is.
She wants to be an IDW person. So that's why the internet is more appealing for her.
Here she's on with a guest on Trey Gowdy's show. I mean, Trey Gowdy did it. Why can't she do it? But here she is comparing. Like, you ready for what this comparison is? Pretty impressive, I think.
Of this foundational principle of our democracy. It means that in a cancel culture, you have some people who believe that they are special, that they are superior, that they have the power to be able to shut down those who have ideas and views that are different, who may follow a path that they deem to be the wrong path and will therefore say, nope, we're going to place obstacles in front of you. We're going to silence certain voices so that only those who agree with us and the path that we deem to be right is the one that is before you to choose. And the issue with this, there's a few issues, but the main issue with this is when you look at our rights and freedoms and our ability to debate them and respectfully come out the other end agreeing or disagreeing, as you and I have over the years, it's based on the fact that we are all children of God. And recognizing that, we then treat each other with respect and respect this freedom that we have. So let's look down the path and say, okay, well, where does this cancel culture lead us? You see the final expression of cancel culture in Islamist terrorist groups like ISIS and Al-Qaeda.
Psycho. Oh, God.
Basically go and behead
Bring
those
in the Hindu nationalism,
they deem
please.
To be infidels or heretics in order to silence them, in order to protect others from being misled by those heretical ideas in the eyes of an ISIS or Al-Qaeda. And so when we look at cancel culture here at home, we see those efforts to cancel or silence those that they don't want the people to hear from, those who may offer a different idea.
Just loves
than,
the sound of her voice.
The one that those in power want people to see or to hear.
What do you think Trey's
to
thinking about?
To.
Just like, and so this ugh, is. I had tuna yesterday. what should I have? I'm sorry, but like, you got to wonder, if 9/11 happened in the year 2021, would we be like, oh my God, Al-Qaeda tried to cancel America. You're trying to cancel us.
She has modeled her political, and it is hard to even fathom that one human being would do this, but her new political brand off of Dave Rubin. She sounds like Dave Rubin. It's singular talk. There's a shoehorning of God into there, because even though Dave left TYT under the pretense of, like, you know, we weren't atheists in the correct way, or Frank wasn't, right? And we should be more critical of Islam. That's exactly what she's doing. She yep. wants to be Dave Rubin. And so now she's in his little media empire, and she's just taking her tips from him. And it's like, there's nothing here. It's just mimicking Rubin. That's something somebody would want to do.
The only valid point that she has is the fact that Brendan has been going around rounding up the descendants of Theodore Geisel, who's Dr. Seuss, for public executions. That's the only
right.
thing that has any valid point. But the idea that this is the fascinating thing about the cancel culture stuff. I mean, there are instances where people are accused of things that they're not doing, and that is bad. And social media has excesses. That is bad. But the idea that people are penalized or criminalized or beheaded in this country, even metaphorically, for what they believe in is A, completely overblown, B, something that has existed every single day of this country. It's just now it is different who gets to say what prevents you from moving up the ladder of success. I'm not saying it's any more necessarily any, I do think it's actually a little bit better, but the idea that you weren't canceled if you came in for a job interview or you were working at a place and you had any type of like opinions or dress or lifestyle. I mean, you get fired if you were gay. That seems like cancel culture.
Right. Or if you're a former felon or if you don't have a permanent address, right? Like these are all reasons that you won't get a job or you won't get a home loan. There's all those kinds of things. So, but this is the ideology of the right and of, I would say, white supremacy actually is the idea that oppression is a grift. That they see oppression and Republicans have grilled it into voters' minds that are things like affirmative action, things like Medicaid, things like welfare, anything like that, all of this is a grift. And so that they want on the grift gravy train. They want to be oppressed too. So cancel culture is a way for white people or men or, you know, sexual assaulters to be like, yeah, you're coming for me. You're coming for me because I see oppression as like a gravy train. So this is, again, and this is why a lot of people are being like, white men are being radicalized by this, because they actually see equality as some sort of kind of, as like their oppression, their yoke to bear
yeah.
is racial and economic equality and gender equality.
And I just want to just recap quickly her political.
Well, wait, let me just to build on that point, Andrew Cuomo today, people know the difference between playing politics, bowing to cancel culture, and the truth. Let the review proceed. I'm not going to resign. Here it is.
Always separated the two. When I do briefings, I put out the facts, and then I offer my opinions. But they are two different concepts. Politicians who don't know a single fact, but yet form a conclusion and an opinion, are, in my opinion, reckless and dangerous. The people of New York should not have confidence in a politician who takes a position without knowing any facts or substance. That, my friends, is politics at its worst. Politicians take positions for all sorts of reasons, including political expediency and bowing to pressure. But people know the difference between playing politics, bowing to cancel culture, and the truth. People know the difference. Between playing politics.
Put cancel culture in the statement, please. This is going to put cancel culture.
Yeah.
Cancel culture. Cancel. Mm-hmm. Cancel culture. Cancel culture.
I like
cancel
how he culture. Did an only phone briefing, right? That's yeah. fairly rare for him. It seems like he might have something to hide.
Again, with Fox, too, right?
Fact. Here's a fact that I don't need to know. I don't need to have an investigation of. There are now 7 women who have come out and said specifically that he sexually harassed them. Not that he got into their space inappropriately, that like they felt uncomfortable, that
two
he sexually yes,
two
I mean these are
allegations and then 5 harassment allegations.
These are that is real. And on top of which, the nursing home allegations.
Oh God, yeah.
It's not, is it really allegations? It's simply a fact at this point. They covered up the numbers. They covered up the numbers.
Deaths. I mean, that's like, again, to the worst kind of person on Twitter right now are the people saying, well, what about the other governors in defense of Andrew Cuomo? Please, please, this is not acceptable behavior by any politician, especially Democratic ones who are trying to, you know, I guess, hold themselves to a higher moral standard. But
well, I mean, the real problem to me with cancel culture and the perception of cancel culture, that it is cancel culture, something so egregiously obvious like this, is that there is no workplace method of accountability when you have a governor who is groping staff members, right? Like that we've created in so many workplaces and within government, a like zero way of reporting something without getting fired, sidelined, alienated, right? And so then a lot of people take to the internet, right? It's seen as a last resort, but I'm confident that if there were actual mechanisms in place, if there was a lack of retribution when people do speak out about things like sexual harassment, that we wouldn't have so-called cancel culture. You wouldn't have the internet playing an outsized role in all of this, because it wouldn't be the goddamn internet's job to play any role in this. And these are, I'm just going to say, like, Lindsay Boylan is someone who's been like, look, I loved working in the governor's office. I'm proud to work in the governorship. But by the end of that, I didn't want anything to do with politics at all, because I kept being groped and like objectified. Same thing with, you know, actors in Hollywood. I kept being groped and objectified. And now I am an accountant or whatever. Now I just left. I left the industry because there was no accountability for this kind of behavior.
Yeah, I think to the extent that there are problems with the so-called cancel culture, I mean, it's just sort of like society having a system of mores and what they think is acceptable. We've done this with countless things, and like I say, it's gone. The only difference now is that you have a different set of people who are making that determination. And I do think that there is a problem with social media, but that is a problem that you have with the introduction of really any new technology, frankly, seems to me.
And I think there's a substantive difference between going after a governor who has immense power and like some random actor, if you're talking about cancel culture, right, in Hollywood.
For sure. For sure.
Have degrees. It's this, we're not talking.
Oh, Cuomo. How many more years does he have?
Two.
We'll see. We'll see. Let's go to the IMs. Joyce from PA. Interested in why you think it's amusing for one of your fans to harass Stephanie Miller. I don't get it. She's an ally. Is this
I don't think it's harassment. They're what is he trolling. Doing? What did he will just call in and like make jokes.
Yeah, I don't think that people should harass people, but I mean, you have a call-in show. I don't even remember it was what did he say he did?
He said like left is best or something like that. But Stam, you know, as the proprietor of Majority Report, you are responsible for the actions of every person who listens to the show at all times. It's a big burden, but you know, that's what you signed up for.
I mean, the whole Baba Booey thing, I mean, I don't know, it's like when people call in and they play a frog on the show. I don't hold first of all,
commitment to character.
I don't hold frogs or frog sounding machine makers responsible for that. And B, it's just part of the show. I mean, I honestly haven't even thought about it, and
you just don't take calls in that way.
I have to admit that I didn't even think about it. I don't think that people should harass. If anybody's doing anything like sending stuff to her house or something like that, of course I'm against that. But I mean, people calling in and saying Baba Booey and saying something on show, you know, whatever. I mean, come on, we're all adults. Axtimus Prime. All Massachusetts residents can now register online for vaccine availability. Also, my wife is a teacher and finally got her Pfizer shot today. Oh, excellent.
Congrats.
Big Dick Cheney. Hey, Sam, I'm waiting for... Yes, no, it's worse. I'm currently awaiting a loved one's potentially scary medical diagnosis. Can she get a good luck shofar? Yes, I hope this works. Chris Christopher Dorner with a death note. Why is so much of the media treating the stimulus bill like a monumental achievement that shows Biden's commitment to the progressive cause? There's a global pandemic and economic crisis. Millions are unemployed, businesses are failing, and nearly everybody is struggling. This bill is the least they could do, and it's arrived far too late. It should be seen as the minimum they could do to keep most of this country functioning.
I'm sorry. I don't know how much it could have come, maybe maximum 2 weeks sooner, based on the reconciliation process. It doesn't include the $15 minimum wage. We have to know when things are good things, or there's no proportionality. And the like, you want the Democratic Party to listen to progressives, acknowledge when there are progressive things in a piece of legislation so they don't think that they can't win in any way. That's key. Because when we win, you got to know it. When there's a good bill, you got to know it. And it is.
Yeah, that were hard fought for. You know, like the unemployment expansion, I mean, under this bill is greater than the CARES Act, right? And it gets rid of that weird loophole. What was it on, like, you know, for employers who have more than 50,000 employees, something like that. So it lifts that, essentially. So if you're fired from a big business, you're going to be qualifying for more unemployment benefits. So that was behind the scenes, boring meetings from progressive think tanks that have to that are doing the hard work. So I just want to, there is work that goes into this, and it's not just Biden's team deciding, you know, when and
again,
what.
Sorry, I'm seeing leftist commentators who I have respected. I'm not going to call them out, but it's so easy to shit all over this bill. It's so safe, right? Because if you're constantly cynical and you don't call, good things good, you get to feel morally superior in every instance, and it's so disempowering, and it's not objective analysis in my view, and I'm frustrated by it, because you know, Sam, Francesca, me, we're not sellouts for calling this bill good. We're just analyzing it from our own perspective, and I think it's consistent, but that's just my view.
I mean, speak for yourself. I'm willing to sell out anytime.
I think. It depends on which. I think. Let's put it this way: from the mainstream media's perspective, I mean, there is no comparison as to a piece of legislation that is so that is this large, that provides so much direct relief to people. Also sort of non-corporate relief. There's just no comparison. Now, with that said, that doesn't erase the fact that we don't have fundamentally different structure in our country, and obviously the $15 minimum wage is a failure to include this in it. The $15 minimum wage really should exist regardless of COVID. But this goes, there is no doubt that this goes further than any other piece of legislation that we could get. They're treating it like a monumental achievement. I mean, it is, there wouldn't be anything if it was Trump. There would be nothing. And I think obviously the liberal media, the sort of the more mainstream media, within the context of just sort of liberal legislation, it's massive, and it is more widely disseminated than anything that is like a non-structural piece of legislation. And there's a couple of things in there, it sounds like garbage, the refundable tax credit, but it is just basically a child allowance. It's paid out $300 a month per child. That's a big deal that is A, being distributed in that way, both because of the material benefits it's going to provide for people, but also because it is an opportunity to change the perception of Americans of what they can expect and they should expect from government. And that has the potential of being really important. I mean, I think you can read, across the spectrum, that there is a broad appreciation for the fact that this does a lot You can look at it as a Band-Aid, and that's more or less what it is. But it's a really effective Band-Aid. It's not a holistic approach to changing the health of the country, but it's a very effective Band-Aid. We'll have in a year from now. But
yeah, I think that in a year from now is important because, like you said, if the child allowance gets made permanent and the PRO Act or the $15 gets passed or HR1, then it does look a lot more significant. If all those things fail, then it looks like just the Band-Aid. So I think it's kind of a little bit too.
So I think, like, you know, and it's hard to have like sort of a nuanced perspective on this, because on one hand, you see an opportunity that within a crisis allows for some type of like structural changes. And even the $15 minimum wage is just sort of like an increase in a bucket that already existed. On some level, the child allowances and the affordability change in the Affordable Care Act, those can have lasting import. And in the meantime, there's just no doubt that like it brings, you know, you're laid off and you're going to get free health insurance.
COBRA is so expensive. And the last thing you want to have to pay for when you become unemployed is a more expensive health care program. It's huge. It's a ton of money.
And should we have called it COBRA for all from the beginning? Like, was that the way forward? Because it feels like Democrats are really into COBRA. We just COBRA for all. Yeah. Obviously, I'm joking.
I know, but it is the most annoying and naked example of how they're afraid that people will get used to this stuff.
So, yeah, that, you know, if you expand Medicare a little in the pandemic, I mean, it's like disaster capitalism or whatever. If they use this opportunity to expand the social safety net in a systemic way, then wow, what will people understand is possible? Again, I'm not saying this is a good systemic structural bill that changes the way our government is run in massive amounts of ways, but in terms of a rescue package, I think it is as good as you were going to get outside the $15 minimum wage from the Biden administration.
Yeah, to give a mouse a cookie is a cautionary tale for like the Democrats and middle of the road Republicans.
You know, you look at history, every single time Republicans fight any kind of social program, fight tooth and nail. And then guess what? 2 years later, when it actually works, they can't go back to their constituents and try and take it away. You know, they get hammered. They get ruined. So, yeah, this is a start. We have to expand it. But yeah, I am very interested in the ways that if this had been a Sanders administration, how would they have layered on the red baiting of socialism to prevent something like this, right? It's a very painful thought for me, because as someone who thinks that Bernie would be a better messenger for this moment in every single way, the red baiting, I haven't heard any of it. I haven't heard like this is socialism yet.
Right.
Who knows?
Right, Francesca. I think you're right. And the popularity of the checks also gets in the way of that, too. But Biden being the figurehead, you can't really convincingly make that argument.
I want to take on just the material significance of this. Jeff Stein does these good tweets where he goes to Reddit and looks at the reaction to people. So some of the reactions of the homepage of Reddit to the announcement that checks hit this weekend. And it's a lot of this. Thank God, finally can get my teeth fixed without having to sacrifice my other medical bills. A lot of it is that sort of thing. Like, I'm going to be able to get my teeth fixed, which is, I mean.
Right. And what it should be is like, you know, in a better world, what it should be is like, I've got dental coverage.
Yeah.
I'm not going to be able to get my teeth fixed now. I'm going to be able to go and, but I think that like I am of the mind that would have been there is no scenario where we would have gotten that. If Bernie was president, we would not have gotten, you know, dental coverage, for instance. That just wouldn't have happened. It's conceivable. You can, let me put it this way. It's very easy for me to imagine that the $15 minimum wage would be in this bill. Also, super easy for me to imagine that you wouldn't get 48 votes for this bill because of, you know, Joe Manchin. It's one thing for him to sort of like say like, well, I'm going to get some disagreements with Joe Biden. It's another for him to say, I'm signing on to a Bernie Sanders bill. Now, we don't know. But I think either one of those arguments have, you know, you can make. And so within this context, the best that we could have is that A, that guy's getting their teeth fixed and there's material benefits that are lasting and, you know, start to provide for people. And B, there are elements of this that will change the way Americans perceive their relationship with government. And that is the first step in my mind to bringing about some of these other changes, because we're coming out of 40 years of where the mantra was for 80% of the country, maybe more, government's the problem. And the less government we have involved in this, the better. And it was only, you know, 12 years ago where, like, the moral hazard of helping people who are stuck in these underwater mortgages is just too great. We can't in any way provide them. We just got to give the money to the banks and just rely on the banks to provide, you know, relief to them. And that obviously didn't work. Nam Dinet. Hi, Sam, Emma, Matt, and Brendan. I'm going to add Francesca.
Thank you.
Would have been polite. If you want David Dayen to be in a time zone ahead of you, instead of Nova Scotia, there is Newfoundland, or Newfoundland, I guess they call it, which is 1.5 hours ahead of New York. Best regards. Thank you. I appreciate that. Jimmy Files, more Brandon Sutton, please. Bendover Shapiro. Sam, what do you think of the U.S. implementing a program similar to Israel for ID cards for people who are vaccinated? Yes, there are HIPAA implications, but people could sign a waiver saying they consent to disclosure regarding the vaccine. I need to think about that. I mean, I could see there being like, we're doing flights for vaccinated people and
Delta, what? Get on it. Don't just block middle seats.
I don't know. Like, maybe we'll give a discount if you're vaccinated or something.
What about a vaccinated and non-vaccinated section? Like, you know, what smoking used to be. Yeah. Can have that in restaurants again?
I don't know. I gotta think about
private
it.
Private planes, though, just vaccinated people who are allowed to fly together. That's rich people flights.
True.
Comrade greeting card, reminder to like and subscribe. Oh, I should tell you this, folks. This is sort of big news. I was told, actually, 37 minutes ago, new level 5 hype trains. Bam.
Say it. No.
Poggers.
Mm-hmm.
Nug Wrangler. There's no need for Francesca to get pregnant. She could just adopt me. Poggers. There you go, new Wrangler. Again. Majority report wardrobe coordinator. This just in. Fox News and Tucker declare war on the 4th of July. I was literally typing about that Stockton study, and you brought it up. That study probably won't satisfy Ben Shapiro. Sam, the way you're able to dance around the Crowder issue by making your position quite clear while avoiding any sort of potential legal entanglement is an art form. Well done. Thank you. I have no idea what you're referring to. Inch, Alex Berenson, COVID's not dangerous, but marijuana will drive your kids to violence. Sean from California, it's a good thing that COVID signed the Bill of Rights and respects our personal freedoms, or the whole it's my freedom argument would be completely ridiculous. Ryan Cole, didn't Trump and the conservative push celebrating July 4th last year? Yeah, that's right. Incidentally, we're going to all make it for Easter last year.
They just don't want it to be told to celebrate July 4th, mandated.
Right. Well,
how you celebrate July?
Because that's what you got. That's what we all got from that speech.
No, of course.
A decree that mm-hmm. it's a satanic worship of July 4th.
Yep. When you get your $1,400 in the bank and you sign into your bank account, there will be a box that pops up.
Of fireworks.
You need to celebrating 4th of July before it releases the funds.
Well, that you should say no, and that actually puts conservatives in a real bind. Be patriotic or take the socialist dirty money.
Mm.
Fireworks are from China often.
Right.
So.
Wow.
Gosh, it's a wonder why Crowder's dad won't let him debate Sam. Nikki and Astoria, today is the last day I get to listen to you live for a while after being laid off from my job in July. I'm starting a new job on Monday in office. I'm excited, nervous, and relieved. Can I get a shofar? Left is best. Congratulations. Glad to hear that. Stern, if Biden hits the 4th of July deadline, he should deliver Bill Pullman's speech from Independence Day. Just like walk up to the Rose Garden lectern and run through the script and walk off like nothing unusual happened. Quinn from Minneapolis, my brother had COVID twice. Thankfully, he's fine. He told me he won a best of 2 out of 3 against the virus. Cheyenne from Florida, check your audio on the clips. Ooh. Doodles, the Cobra subsidy is an inefficient good. If the government wants to pay out of the ass unnecessarily, that's their dumb mistake. Well, yes, but it's also a way of avoiding, you know, sort of like any type
and still tying it to employment again. I mean, it's past employment.
Why are gas prices going up, Sammy? I am Giga Jeb. I am not sure. I need to read in. My first thought would be that more people are traveling and you have more economic activity around the, that's probably part of it. I wonder if maybe the storms in Texas may have inhibited supply. I know also there's that Colonial leak. I don't know if that's in North Carolina. It's the biggest leak that we've had in maybe ever in the country. They're still finding out more about it. The only upshot to that is that the head of the North Carolina their version of the EPA is now the head of our EPA. So maybe this guy is sort of somewhat sensitive to massive leaks like that. And that was a leak, incidentally. This pipeline, about 3 feet underground, it is runs from Texas all the way up to the northeast on the eastern seaboard. And they had a leak of over 1 million gallons. I don't know what it's come in at, 1.2 million gallons. It was discovered by two kids on ATVs, two teenagers. So their entire system to determine that there was a massive leak, it was bubbling up. Now understand what it takes for a leak to bubble up. It means that everything below it has to be so hyper super saturated
right.
that it defies gravity and starts to go up through 3 feet of soil and starts to bubble so much so that if you're driving by and you're a teenager on an ATV, you can see it. And so their system to be aware that there was this massive leak obviously clearly failed. Sammachusett.
They sent the kids on ATVs. You don't know what they didn't. Those kids are patrolling the pipeline. Solid, dude.
Are like,
we just look for leaks, bro.
Pipe inspectors of Colonial. You guys have got it. And that's tough to find. You can't teach it. Sammachusetts. Sam. Am I the only one who feels like Jamie's exit was presented way too abruptly? How long ago did you know she was going to leave? I think she had a very significant effect on the show, and to announce her departure, to have her leave within 2.5 hours seems far too abrupt. I mean, look, I suppose there's no doubt that we...
I announced that I was leaving TYT on the same day. There are a lot of just... on the day I left, there's just like logistical concerns and just things that happen sometimes in that area. I mean, there was
still stings, Emma.
Well, we just decided, you know, and it was like, you know, we just decided this was the right way to do it. I'll go on John's show and we'll announce it that way on my last day. So I
don't know. I mean, I perceive it as a loss to the show, and how we could have, I don't know, we could have, announced it earlier, I guess, and it could have been an ongoing thing. But, I perceive it broadly as a loss for the show and for a different perspective. And it's something that I feel like having however you want to define this, a left perspective or a further left perspective it's a deficit that we have on the show. And it's obviously compounded by, Michael's death. And so it's something I'm aware of that I feel and I'm looking to address it. And I don't have a timeline for this. It takes me... You know, it took like, I don't know, 2 years to turn on our Twitch subscriptions. So, But
you ever want to talk anarchism, Sam? I'm down. Let's do it.
I mean, it is. I mean, it is.
I'm here.
You have on the show, and I think you know part of it is also the when we went into COVID, we didn't know how long it was going to last. It has fundamentally changed the way that we do the show, not just from a production standpoint, but it changes the, you know, we never had video before. You know, if Francesca was with us a year, 54 weeks ago, you'd be on the phone. And, Em and I wouldn't have two different cameras. We'd have one camera or, you know, we would be mixed and, you know, Matt and Brendan and Jamie would be sitting over here and but we're going to head back into that type of situation. We don't know when that's going to be. So, there's a lot of different sort of like issues that are all wrapped up in it. But I mean, I can see how people would be like, I wanted a longer period of time for a wind up. But then I don't know. It can go.
I think this calls for a best of Jamie mashup, clearly.
Somebody cut it.
Needs to happen with some Sarah McLachlan in there and boom, legacy.
Evan from New Jersey. Then we would get it pulled down from.
true.
All Republicans are failed comics who are deadpan, ironic banters. They just got lost in the bit. They're also not smart. Moon yes. and Gras Gras. What an East Coast elitist thing to say. I thought they were trying to be the average Joe. Yeah, it's true. We didn't even really contemplate like that. He's not going to give up the foie gras.
I just imagine being the geese. Like, imagine knowing. Like, it's bad enough you're being, like, stuffed with truffles or whatever they do and then, you know, cut your liver. But, like, that Greg Gutfeld's going to be the one to ingest it.
Ugh.
It's a bad way to go.
Yep.
Here we go. I have excellent dental insurance, but will still be giving the dentist most of my Biden bucks. There you go. My border collie. The idea that China could call us on our debt is absurd. They bought bonds that have terms and are paid back over time, just like all debt. Indeed. Keith from Manhattan. Sam, who was the guest who talked about the debt deficit not being as big as a deal we thought? Stephanie Kelton. I'd like to learn more, but we got to bring her back on, actually.
She's great.
Time. You could look at any of those. I mean, there's more from the Levy Institute. I think there's people up in like Bard and University of Missouri. Look up modern monetary theory. And maybe it wasn't Kelton. It was maybe Nathan Tankus, too, that we had on. I can't remember. Wyoming. I've never understood why the fiscal responsible limited government keep cash in your bank account. Republicans are always clamoring about people getting their money back from the big bad government money hoarder. To support the government hoarding cash while claiming you want less and less government just breaks my brain. Yes, I mean the specifics of that in modern monetary theory makes it quite clear. Maybe you don't even need to be an MMTist to understand this dynamic. A government surplus is a private sector deficit. The money just keeps going back and forth. And who do you want to have that money? A government deficit means there's more money in the, you know, so-called private economy. Married to Mothra. Most people are never going to accept the dictatorship of the bourgeoisie, which explains this class of flight to another party. The system is broken. Sam, does he always wear a kippah? I also feel like it's a Catholic dude maining a rosary. I think he does. I think he's a full-time kippah wearer. You're talking about Ben. Let's see. Don't lean too hard into the baby stuff. It's anti-Chinese rhetoric used to boost a national Western Asia uprising. I'm not sure. I think that's a joke. All right, let's do... we got a couple more of these, and then we're out of it. Sam Cedar Simp. The study Shapiro is citing from Brookings Institute later did another study which clarified that the first is primarily only for white people who have far greater access to certain resources than minorities have. I don't know what he's talking about there. You got to be more specific. Sometimes we don't get to these later.
That's the sequence to success.
Okay.
Oh.
Sam from Ottawa. Ontario's Liberal government had begun a UBI pilot program in a small town in province. Yes, we heard about that when we had the We've had UBI people on to talk about that. By all anecdotal accounts, it was going excellent. Doug Ford, the current conservative premier, canceled the program as a waste of money. Tree Boy, Democrats' new plan for 2022 is to run against Marjorie Taylor Greene in a 27 Republican district. Who do they think they're hitting? This is the same Amy McGrath, Beto O'Rourke, Jamie Harrison strategy where they're guaranteed to lose and only serves as a cash grab. Yeah, I mean, I don't know if it's the entire party's. Prairie Fire Kowalski. The number of one cause of poverty is lack of cash. Oil production is down due to a lack of production due to poor demand last year. Leftist poggers, Keystone Pipeline would have heavily oil, so a leak would not have been found till water samples show it. Indeed.
Oh, damn.
Vitamin stuff. Two more. Max and BK. What is an ISIS beheading but a cancellation persevering?
That's a reference to that.
To the Tulsi BS.
All right, and the final I am of the week. Champagne Communista. Hey, Sam, why are they not canceling rent? There's a difference between acknowledging something good, but it's also important to recognize when there's something is largely inadequate. Things are so bad that even crumbs look like a feast. Come on, man, be real. Privilege colors a lot of people's perspective. Look, I understand that. It's $25 billion for rent relief in itself. There's no... The rent cancellation would have involved paying a lot of these landlords. I think you're going to find that there's actually going to be more money in there than you think, because a lot of that money is also going to cities and they're going to have their rent cancellation programs. So would have been better if there were $50 billion as opposed to 25 or closer to $75 billion. Yes, I agree. But I'm referring to the lamestream media, not y'all. Emma's right. This is as good as it was going to get. I mean, it's Joe Biden, and Joe Biden of 1993, I can assure you, would have destroyed this bill.
Yes.
And of 2008 would have never ushered it in. But
and Ilhan's now pushing for more rental and mortgage relief.
And that's great. I think there's going to be another reconciliation bill, and it's going to happen, I think, in the fall. So we'll have a better sense. Francesca, where can people see the Bituation Room?
Hey, you can watch it on YouTube or Twitch every Sunday, 6-9 Eastern, or listen wherever you get your podcasts is also very acceptable.
Thank you so much for coming on. Always a pleasure.
Thanks. Thank you, Sam and Emma.
Emma, Brendan, Matt, good job this week. Folks, we'll see you on Monday.
It might take all the strength I got to get to where I want. But I know somehow I'm gonna get there. I wasn't looking when I just got caught between the truth and the light bulb. But finding out won't make me feel any better. Yeah, I know the clock is ticking, but the meds are gonna kick in. And my pilot light shining bright. I guess somewhere the choice was made for the option where you don't get paid.